Hello, podcasters. Thanks so much for grabbing the podcast and listening today. We got a great show for you. Is Mexico turning into Venezuela? I don't know. Yeah, it kind of looks like that.
It does kind of look that way, doesn't it?
Also, you know, I understand the vets that have a, you know, an emotional support animal. They've got a dog or whatever, and some people, you know, need that, and I fully support that. However, I think we're going a little too far, and I don't mean that people are just saying, no, this is an emotional support dog that I keep in my purse. What I mean is the guy from Pennsylvania that says he now has an emotional support alligator. We get into that on today's podcast.
We get into the media meltdown as well. Last night, there was a great special that Blaze TV did with like a bunch of our personalities. You can still get that on the Facebook page, I would imagine, right? And YouTube?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You can go back and watch
behind
it. It's worth it.
You know, if you're a member, you also get it at theblaze.com.
Yeah, blazetv.com/Beck is the place to sign up. blazetv.com/Beck. The promo code is Beck.
Okay, also, we take a look at what is happening with the left and the abortion laws. And if you haven't heard the audio yet of what is happening in Virginia, stand by. A little shocking how far we have progressed. All on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Homeowners, want to talk to you here. There is a data breach just exposed 24 million Americans to home title fraud. Look, I just want to say this. There are things that we advertise for on this show that I don't use, but I have checked the product out and everything else, and I believe in it. But this one is one that I joined, Stu joined, Pat joined before we were doing commercials, because I don't remember who first heard about it, but we went around and we were like, we got to talk to these home title lock people because this is crazy. It is so easy to steal your home, your title, then take a loan out against that home that you own or think you own, and then you lose everything. We have this, and I highly recommend you have this. Even more important is if you have a family or your mom and dad are still alive and they own their home and is paid for, they are super targeted. So please get Home Title Lock. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. You're going to get a free title scan and report. That's a $100 value free with just signing up. HomeTitleLock.com. Do it now.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Choose your news.
I think, you know, most importantly, we should go with this, I guess it needs to be a change in the law, probably the biggest, you know, sort of health story that you talked about there, which would be the emotional support alligator.
You want to start there?
I think we start with the emotional. There.
All right, well, it's, you know, it's an interesting story. York Haven, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania man says his emotional support alligator helps him deal with his depression. Joey Henney, 65, said his registered emotional support alligator named Wally likes to snuggle and give hugs. Now, I don't know how an alligator gives hugs with such little arms.
Right, famously small arms.
Right.
The reach comes from the mouth.
Right. He's a 5-foot-long alligator. He has now received approval from the doctor that Wally is an emotional support animal.
What does that mean? What do you mean they've received support from the doctor? What do you mean it's registered? What is that? What do these terms mean? They mean, what, did you sign up on a website and...
No, you went to the doctor. He said, I don't want to go on medication for my depression, mm-hmm. but my alligator makes me really happy. And if I could travel around with my alligator, I would never be lonely and I would be fine. Look, dude, you're going to be very lonely if you're walking around with an alligator. Okay. You know, the only person that's going to talk to you is the alligator. Mm-hmm. And when the alligator starts to talk and you start understanding the alligator, you're beyond depression, dude.
Plus, this is one of the 3 or 4 things that would guarantee you'd be lonely.
Yes. Right? I mean,
it's like carrying around an alligator or walking around an alligator everywhere you go guarantees that no one will ever come near you.
Right. So he said Wally was rescued from outside Orlando, 14 months old. He's still growing. Well, that's good. He could be 16 feet long one day. He said Wally eats chicken wings and shares an indoor plastic pond with a smaller rescued alligator named Scrappy. Wally, who turns 4 this year, is a big teddy bear. Yeah, I got news for you. He's an alligator, and he will eventually eat a child or you if he thinks you taste like chicken.
Yeah, this is like the guy who, the Grizzly Man documentary. Do you know that story?
No.
It was a guy who really, he had a real connection with bears. And he would go in the woods and he would have these amazing interactions with bears.
Really?
And he kept trying to tell people, you're scared of bears. But bears are good creatures. They're good, quiet, loving creatures. Until he was filming himself and was eaten by a bear. And when that happened, it turned the documentary a little dark.
A little dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is what happens here. Someday, this little cute story of the emotional support alligator turns into the inside of his dining room looking like a slaughterhouse. And
so you know what this is? This is a stupid guy who just hasn't had the money or whatever to move to Florida. Because remember when we moved to Tampa?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everyone said, and at first you don't understand it. Hey, welcome to Florida. By the way, don't ever reach into a bush here. What? What do you mean don't reach into a bush? You know, there's ponds and water around and stuff. Just don't reach into any of the bushes. So if you go golfing or something and it goes into a bush, leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because there's alligators. Okay. Alligators. Yeah, and some people move down and they think alligators are fun, and so they'll go out and they'll feed them chicken. And then, somebody's kid in the neighborhood is missing a few weeks later. What, you mean it ate it? Yeah. Now, listen, here's how you run for an alligator. Don't run in a straight line. Wait a minute. Are we really having this conversation? Do you remember? Did you have that conversation?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They tell you, I don't even know if it's true, but they tell you to run in zigzags.
Zigzags.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't run in a straight line from an alligator. An alligator cannot turn corners fast, but they can run straight line much faster than you.
I don't even know if this is true. Do we?
Don't know.
I don't know.
Don't care.
All I know is if I was running from an alligator, I would have attempted it, true or not.
Right. So one day we were driving home, and we were driving on our street just to get home. It was like a cul-de-sac, and we're driving on the street, and I stop because there is this 8-foot alligator, 7-foot alligator that is just sunning himself across the street. So you can't drive. He's like a speed bump. And, you know, you don't want to run over the alligator, but I'm not getting out and saying, shoo, shoo. So we had our cell phone and we called the police and we said, what do we do in this situation? Oh, I got to call animal control. Okay, call animal control. Yeah, we don't. How big is he? I don't know. 6-7 feet. Oh, yeah, we don't pick him up until they're 10 feet. Wait, what? What do you mean? So what do I do? Well, wait until the alligator moves. And we did.
How long did that take?
It took about an hour, I think. I mean, because none of us were willing to... I'm not getting out of my car. It's an alligator, man. So now this guy is, because he lives up in Pennsylvania, he's like, oh, these poor rescued alligators. It's a deadly animal. And it's a wild animal. You don't treat an... Stu, does an alligator make a good pet?
I would argue no. Does not make a good pet.
Well, as long as you always remember it's an alligator, it's a fine pet. This guy doesn't remember it's an alligator. He thinks it's a snuggly toy. And if this guy comes on an airplane, dude, I'm sorry. If that's your emotional support... You know what? You need to stay off this plane because you are nuts and you have no judgment. You're not going to be able to open the door if this thing goes down. So you certainly are not sitting in an exit aisle. You are not sitting in an exit seat because you're never going to be able to open the door. Second of all, the only way that alligator is getting onto a plane with me is if you make it into luggage.
And then, then
shoes, a briefcase, a belt, whatever. Other than that, if it's not carrying your clothes, that ain't getting on the plane.
Isn't it, though? It's a bigger issue than just the emotional support alligator, in that the emotional support animal is just a giant scam for people to bring their pets wherever they want to go.
Oh, I think so.
I mean, they're seeing this on airplanes all the time. People just bring more and more of their pets. They get more and more exotic because of this bizarre cutout they have that, you know, there are people in, that have, you know, mental distress and have severe ailments that, you know, reportedly respond well to animals, and there's a reason to understand that that's possible and is has happened before. But now it's just people being like, look, you get it registered. And my understanding of the registering process of this is anybody can register. There's no official process. You just go and get it registered from anybody who says they registered. And then you can say, I have a registered emotional support animal. And then because these airlines and other places have been like, well, for people who really need them, maybe we can make exceptions. Well, it's registered. I guess we have to let them on. And it's becoming more and more of a problem because, you know, 90% of this stuff is just nonsense. People like their pets. They want to bring them on planes.
So we have canines, and they're registered protection animals. Mm-hmm. And so they have to wear the vest, and they have an actual tag and a license and everything else. And I think there is a place for, like, I know a lot of people who are soldiers, PTSD.
Yeah, that's a great
and
example.
It works for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you have a registered dog as your you know, emotional support, but I think you're right. I think people who carry them around in purses a lot of times, and they carried them around in purses because they couldn't get a bigger dog because then they couldn't take them everywhere, are now just getting a dog and going, oh, yeah, this is my emotional support. Really? Is it? And beyond that, even if it is and it's your dog, okay. If it's your cat, and I hate cats, okay. An alligator?
No. You don't get to make... That's emotionally distressing everyone else around you.
Yes.
Like, the overall
is a
negative. You
might be depressed, but we're in full-fledged panic here.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
All right, so the abortion thing, this is in Virginia. I want to play this audio. This is in Virginia. The legislature is now talking about a new bill to make abortion legal all the way up to birth. Now, we have a partial birth abortion restriction, right?
A ban.
It's a ban. Can't do it. How can you do this all the way to birth? Well, you don't partially birth. You have to kill the child. Not with the feet and the shoulders out, and just the head.
Which is how they used to do it.
Right. Now they just go in and kill the child, and then you birth the baby 2 days later. Okay? So you're still going through all of the birth. You're doing that, but you're birthing a dead baby.
And think about that. You're delivering the child. Mm-hmm. You're just delivering the child after it died.
Right. But
so
you're
you could
saying,
easily deliver the child alive and then give it up for adoption. That
correct.
Was always the argument was, well, we don't want to carry it to term. I mean, that's you're causing emotional distress and all these terrible things. Well, you're actually birthing the child in this scenario. And still, they want it to happen.
And they think that their excuse is, well, it might be emotionally distressful for the woman. Well, wait, will it be more emotionally distressed to have a child, then give it to a loving family, or to birth a dead child and go through that experience? Which is it? Which is it?
We know it has nothing to do with either one of those things.
Correct.
It has nothing to do with
correct.
It.
Correct. This is just leading us to murder children. Children. Okay. So, listen to the questions. This is in Virginia in legislature as they are discussing the bill as written. Listen to this.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay. But to the end of the third trimester.
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs of that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a you know, a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman
I understand
make
that. I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
So it's if in the off chance that a woman experiences pain during pregnancy or birth, that would be a threat to her health, and therefore she could have an abortion. So if the birth and somehow, and I don't know if this has ever occurred to a woman, but if it somehow becomes painful during the birthing process, if there is an indication of discomfort physically or mentally, at that point they can have a mental health exemption from these laws.
Yeah, except the problem is if it's, you know, going to be painful or hard, she still has to give birth to the child 2 days later, dead.
Oh, well, of course. But that, luckily, though, there'll be no mental stress because the baby won't be alive. That's where it all comes from, Glenn. The birthing process is it's always been a wonderfully easy process for women. And now, if we happen to see some discomfort, that certainly the abortion's the only answer there.
This is absolutely unbelievable.
I mean, there's no one on earth who believes that that is anything other
than murder.
I mean, like, you're talking about a 9-month baby that can come out at any time. You're going to have to birth it anyway. It's just going to be dead when you birth it instead of alive. There's no way to justify that. It's impossible. And, you know, if you go back to the partial birth abortion ban, what you'll find is a lot of Democrats saying that is ridiculous. We're never going to do that. That's not what we're talking about. This is a slippery slope, though. You're going to go for more. And that was their argument against the bill. It was never against partial birth abortion. It was against, look, you're going to try to go after, this is your slippery slope. It's your little window in to take away all women's rights when it comes to their reproductive health. Now, it's going to be a litmus test for every Democratic candidate to come into that primary and tell you that, yes, 3 seconds before birth is appropriate. You know what? Maybe we should get rid of that partial birth abortion ban. Maybe a couple of minutes after, if it's only a couple of minutes, maybe if it's still connected to the umbilical cord, it counts and we can still do it then. They will go through every iteration of this to try to justify it because they're all going to be in this giant contest to move further and further left to bring the death of innocent children to the foreground of this debate. It's a miracle if you're wanting crazy socialists to run against, because that's what you're going to see here. But it's scary because once it gets down to a one-on-one contest, anything can happen. And if Kamala Harris or you know, one of these crazy...
Any of them, really.
It's gonna
I mean,
be,
you think Beto's going to not march to this tune?
He'll
of course, all of them will.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
Van Jones said it. Yeah.
Van Jones is a pariah. Van
right.
Jones did the criminal reform bill with Donald Trump, and he's like, guys, this is a giant win. What are you, one of them Trump supporters?
Yeah, Van
it's
Jones.
Van Jones.
He's a communist. Remember?
This guy is now too conservative. It's nuts.
Now Van Jones's picture is up at the Koch brothers meeting. Do you see that? Seriously.
No.
Legitimately, he was. Because the Koch brothers.
Because Koch brothers, he was behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, he
Koch brothers
funded it.
Have supported the criminal justice reform thing for a very long time. And now,
can you imagine the ads? The ads would be do you know that Donald Trump is in bed with some of the evil people in the world, the Koch brothers and Van Jones?
Wait, what?
You mean the communist from the Obama administration? How is this?
This is wild, man.
This is insane.
It's a crazy world.
When they go so far that Van Jones
looks
moderate.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, that Howard Schultz doesn't even belong in the party anymore. I mean, this guy is a lifelong Democrat. He would agree with us on maybe 5% of things, right? Like he thinks that the debt is a big problem, right? Like that's something you'd understand. He doesn't like Elizabeth Warren's billionaire tax, right? Like there's a couple things that you could find where you'd agree with Howard Schultz, but generally he's just he's the Democrat that Democrats used to be. You know, it wouldn't be one that I would vote for, but he's now he doesn't Democrat. Even have a place in the party.
I think he's the Democrat that the average Democrat still is. They're just
the one's not in Washington.
They're just not allowed to say it. They're not allowed to embrace it. And it's going to be, I'm telling you right now, this is going to be the exact opposite election where we had looked at Hillary Clinton and said, she's the devil. Okay. I remember Alex Jones was like, you smell sulfur around her. She's the devil. All right. There are people that believe on the other side that Donald Trump, at all costs, he must never be president, not for another day, and they will do anything. Many of us, and we had the evidence, we had decades of evidence. She is corrupt to the core. She's corrupt. And it will, I mean, the Republic is doomed with her, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anybody, and we started looking at just win, just stop her. That is going to be the mindset of the Democratic Party. Just stop him.
And that's why they would be fine with Schultz running as a Democrat. Like they're half saying he's evil. And they don't want him. You know, he's just a billionaire who's out for himself. What a jerk. And it's like, well, but if he ran for a Democrat, then he can try to flesh that out in the Democratic primary. Well, why would you want him to be your candidate if you think he's a evil billionaire jerk? Well, it's because they're worried about
the
independents taking
Ross Perot.
Right. Yeah,
they're worried about the Ross Perot effect.
Have you heard him interrupted over and over again? You're just an evil billionaire, and you're going to make Trump win.
But join our party and run with us.
Right. It's just...
What a world.
Oh, man. I need an emotional support alligator. That's what I need.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So the article starts, they're both brash, outer borough New Yorkers, each with their own notorious nickname. She's AOC and he's the Donald. Both shocked their parties by coming out of nowhere to win their elections, defeating members of the establishment despite being greatly outspent. And both have broken the rules of D.C. politics in strikingly similar ways, using social media to push policy and usher in previously uninspired voters. Welcome, Selena Zito, a real journalist and one who really looks for the truth and then balances it with common sense as well to tell the story. Selena, what is the point of your article other than the fact that they both are cut from the same cloth in their approach, not their policies, but their approach?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
So I think the larger point, which I still think some people don't get, is that they speak to and or speak for segments of society that have felt as though they are not, they haven't been brought in as part of, fulfilling or living the American dream. They speak to people who oftentimes the establishments of both parties either take for granted, use their vote, and leave them behind. So take Republicans, for example. Republicans were more than happy to get independent and Democratic voters or voters that didn't vote a lot to be swept up in the Tea Party movement in 2010 to help them usher in majorities, not only in the House, but also down ballot and in governor's offices. They were more than happy and happy to welcome them in 2014 when they took the Senate and won even more Republican seats. But, they didn't really want them when it came to the presidential election because they did not understand that these voters were going to reject the establishment because the establishment hadn't listened to them for at least two generations. And the same goes with Democrats. Democratic voters, especially in particular young millennial voters and minority voters, don't feel as though the Democratic establishment has their back. In fact, they think that they're corrupt. Look at the way that Bernie Sanders was treated by the DNC. Mm-hmm. They believe those things are unfair and weighted towards the establishment and away from their voices. You may not agree with Trump voters. You may not agree with AOC's voters, but they have a point.
So, Selena, I think what's happening with the Democrats is absolutely fascinating. First of all, when you look at the average Democrat, the average Democrat is saying the Democrats are moving too far left and they're going crazy. Where I think the average Democrat would look at a guy like Howard Schultz, if he wasn't looked at as a party spoiler. And the average Democrat would probably go for him, where they're not into this socialist thing. However, the other part that they're not haven't listened to and betrayed is this socialist who, since Woodrow Wilson, has been told, no, we're just progressing to this socialist utopia. That's what happened in France that led to the book, The Coming Insurrection. The communist and the socialist said, I've had enough. You keep telling us you don't believe in this system, but you're never going to take us over the finish line. And it's time. So who in the end do the Democrats have?
You know, it's going to be, here's really what's really difficult. First of all, I thought the reaction by Democrats to Howard Schultz running was ridiculous. They literally lost their minds. When he decided that he's going to run as a centrist. What does that tell you? It tells you that they know their party is too far left. They know they can't appeal to the squishy middle, which, by the way, a large segment of the society is in the squishy middle. They look at politics as a buffet, and they like this, and this person, but they don't like that. That's why we have big wave election cycles in our midterms. Because we keep sending a message with who we vote for, and Washington keeps misreading it and thinking we like them again.
Mm-hmm. But wait a minute. You are still looking at Howard Schultz, and you say that it was shocking to you, but they're looking at Schultz as a spoiler, and they are taking the position that so many people took. Look, if somebody would have run third party, if Kasich or Cruz or anybody would have run third party, that person would have been done in politics forever because it was anyone but Hillary. And we have to defeat Hillary. That's the mindset, I think, going into 2020 with the Democrats. Anyone but Trump.
Yeah, absolutely. They're terrified of a third party candidate because it could, you know, definitely have a huge impact on who their nominee is. So what does that tell you, Glenn? It tells me that they are afraid of the direction that their own party is mm-hmm. going. They understand it's too far left, yet they can't stop it. Why? Because the activists on either side of the party tend to push through the furthest to the left or right in a primary situation. And that's what they're facing. The most sort of boisterous and noisy people in the party and the ones that are most invested in politics are the ones to the furthest left. They understand. I mean, had there not been that sort of force field of the superdelegates for the Democrats, Bernie Sanders, in all likelihood, would have been the nominee.
So how are they going to get through? I mean, I'd love to hear your opinion. Then we got to get back to Ocasio-Cortez and her traits that are similar to Trump. But right now you have Virginia, Rhode Island, Vermont, and New York pushing through everything but partial birth abortion. And the only reason why they don't include that is because we have a ban on it. So the minute the woman is dilated and they say push, at any time she can say, kill the baby, I don't want this baby. And they will. It's so unbelievably extreme. Why are they pushing that through? Why are they going this far? If you say, you know, they know they're too extreme. Why are they doing that then?
Because they live within, it's the, what I outlined in the book. They live within these super zip codes, and they all think alike, and they're so sort of outside the mainstream Democratic position on abortion. If you look at the statistics, in particular among young people have become more pro-life, yes, over time. And it hasn't, and it's not all about religion. It's also about science. Science has changed, and artificial intelligence has changed an abundant amount of things in our life, including our how we view abortion. You can see what your baby looks like and see a heartbeat at much faster speed than you could 5 years ago, 10 years ago. You know there's life in you. And these young people see that. They see that through when they're in school, when they're taught about things in their science classes, but they also see that in their personal lives when they make personal decisions.
For 30 years ago, I said if there was a window to a womb that was natural, abortion would stop because you would see it as a baby. It's our eyes that are allowing us to live in this life, live this lie, and as technology gets better, we'll recognize a child earlier and earlier. And that is what's happening to the millennials right now.
Absolutely. The millennials and Gen Z are much more pro-life than Gen X and the boomers were.
Okay, so let me go back to Ocasio-Cortez and the things that she is doing right now that you say she has in common with Donald Trump. And the left doesn't seem to have a problem with it, with her, but they do with Donald Trump. Explain that. So the old crypt keepers in Washington, D.C., they don't like Donald Trump because he short circuits the system. The crypt keepers in the media don't like it because he goes around them. But Ocasio-Cortez is doing exactly the same thing. And that's what your article is pointing out. Tell me about it.
Absolutely. So she goes, I mean, just think about the 2 days after she was, she won her election in November. She went and attended a protest in Nancy Pelosi's office and walked around and high-fived everyone in the office. I mean, she knew that Pelosi was going to be the next Speaker of the House, but yet she was very defiant in projecting to her voters, plus people who, you know, believe in her cause, that she was going to buck the system. And she has done it in the same way that Trump has. She goes against her party multitudes of times. She says outrageous things on Twitter. She flirts with the truth, much in the same way that Trump does, and is unapologetic for all of them. But most importantly, she gives voice to people who feel that they don't have a voice. I would argue that is the problem that the Democrats have, and they have these two sort of completely different forces within their party.
Yeah,
you have the more centrist Democrats who want things to be a little more normal, to have a party that's a little more stable. And then you have the people to the left who embrace many aspects of socialism and who are very strongly identified with social justice causes, who are pushing back against them and saying, your time has gone. We don't really explore that division because they aren't the party in power, but it is as bad and or worse than the Republicans' division leading up to 2016.
So this is why I thought the election last year, if we hadn't created this nightmare scenario where we were at each other's throats and we could have a logical conversation, the election last year, I thought should have been between Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz or somebody like Ted Cruz, because that's where I think the people are. We are at this choice. We're going to drop capitalism and go for social justice, or we're going to stick to the Constitution and we're going to clean capitalism up and everyone has to live under the same laws. That's really where we are, but that's not where either party is. So who wins in the end? Who are the Nancy Pelosi's and Chuck Schumer going to win, or the Ocasio-Cortez, Kamala Harris people?
Well, that's sort of the great question. Kamala Harris, hopefully I'm saying that right, and AOC are the noisiest of the two sides. So that means they get the most attention. Does that project them into a win? It's hard to tell. And I think even a lot of voters, and so if you go back and you look at the election in 2018 and you look at a lot of those suburban districts, you saw a lot of these races were at like 1%, right? There were a lot of suburban Republican voters who went to the Democrat side because they ran moderates and they didn't feel comfortable in the Republican Party, but they don't belong over in the Democratic Party. And they're up for grabs. And I think that conflict that you talk about, the Cruz-Sanders conflict, is what is going to either split them to one side or the other. And I don't know what happens to the Nancy Pelosi's and Chuck Schumer's going forward, because I think the tenets of the party have become too far left.
All right. I was just talking to John Miller, who is our White House correspondent, and he was saying that when he's in the press room, the press does not like Jim Acosta. They might agree with him. They don't like Donald Trump, but they are sick of him because they know he's a showboater and everything else. And I've heard rumblings that the same is being said now about Ocasio-Cortez, that there's a lot of people who are like, all right, calm down, slow down. Is there a chance she wears out her welcome?
Well, that's the big question, right? Honestly, I've never seen a young person or a member of Congress come in and create the attention and disruption that she has in my career covering politics. When you go to Washington, you're one of 435, right? You're not supposed to be the center of attention unless you're in leadership, no matter what party it is. But this is a new world, Glenn. And it's hard to sort of predict what happens to her. I think that if the Democrats are too heavy-handed and backbench her, then they're going to face a sort of insurrection within their own party, in the same way that sort of how the Republicans tried to treat Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
End of the day, Ted Cruz prevailed.
Selena, is he
considered a statesman within the party?
Selena, thank you so much. Selena Zito, you can follow her at Selena Zito on Twitter. She's just a fantastic journalist and writer. Thank you so much.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Preface this next segment with Texas is closed. Okay? You missed your opportunity to move here. If you're thinking about moving here from Indiana, from Illinois, or from California, it's closed. And you wouldn't believe how horrible it is. They are executing whales on the sides of the streets. And no one can stop it, no matter how many people there are. No one could stop it, so don't come here. It's awful. Anyway, Janice is in Indiana. Janice, welcome to the program.
Hi, Glenn. Hi, Stu. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. How cold is it at your house today?
The temperature is about negative 17, negative 18, and the wind chill is between negative 49 and negative 51.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's frostbite in 10 minutes if you're outside with that wind chill.
Don't go outside.
So are like school operating? You guys, what are you doing?
My kids have what's called e-learning days. So they have their laptops. They're logged in through Wi-Fi. And I'm sitting on the couch right now with my 12-year-old Cole, and he is working on one of his engineering class on his laptop.
Wow.
He's been FaceTiming his friends, and they're working together on a project, and they're doing it from the couch.
Wow. It sounds like almost like homeschooling and school choice is happening there, but it's not. It's definitely not. It's public school.
We have an amazing school system. Every student has a laptop. If we cancel school, the kids just log onto their laptops, email their teachers if they need something, and they upload the classes, and the kids sit at home and do their work.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's great.
You know, more and more of that is coming, obviously.
I know. I mean, we just get rid of the building. But anyway, Janice, thank you so much. Negative 17. Let's go to Milwaukee. Rob in Wisconsin. I heard in Green Bay it is 40 below zero. Where are you? You're in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I'm in downtown Milwaukee right now, and right now our air temperature is negative 21. I live a little bit west of the city, and when I left for work this morning around 7:30, air temperature was negative 24, and we have that same kind of negative 48 to negative 50 type wind chills, and the news was telling us that we're actually looking at frostbite potentially within about 4 minutes with those wind chills.
You know, but I don't think I'd believe them unless one of them went out into the wind and stood there and said, this is how cold it really is. Watch my skin turn black. I wonder why they're not doing that. Rob.
Frauds. They've gotten hurricanes, but you know, they cannot do that with fraud. Come on.
Watch as my fingers turn to ice and fall off. That's the weatherman we're looking for.
I want a committed journalist out there.
Oh, my gosh.
Willing to lose a couple appendages for the story.
Dale in Minnesota. How cold is it in Minnesota?
27 below Glen and same as Green Bay. There were about 55 below zero. My buddy's 200 miles north of me. He's 61 below.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so how long have you lived in Minnesota?
Oh, God forbid, all my life.
Oh, my gosh.
I move out of there every year. I threaten myself. And like a fool, I never leave.
Well, Dale, there's such a thing as a car.
Yeah.
Get in it and drive south. Anyway, you've lived in Minnesota where it's always cold. Have you ever experienced anything like this?
Yeah, I remember it. You know, I remember stuff like this when I was a kid. I think actually as I grew up there a little bit, I think the weather's gotten better up there. Mm-hmm. Once in a while, you get a cold spurt. But, you know, also, Glenn, I got the heater going on underneath the house trying to thaw the pipes out, too.
Jeez. Crazy.
Well, remember, too,
Dale,
Glenn,
thanks, man. Thanks for listening.
Last year, the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl, and they are still champions for several more days.
several more days.
So I'm celebrating every minute
yes,
of it.
Yes, yes.
But, I mean, that was in Minnesota. Can you imagine if the Super Bowl right now is going on with the temperatures minus 30?
No, I can't imagine it because there are a bunch of millionaires who are going to make millions of dollars, but I can't imagine paying to go sit in the stands.
Well, remember, this is an indoor stadium, so the stadium itself would have been fine.
I don't care.
But, I mean, think about, like...
You have to get there.
There are, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent on... You know, these events and all this crazy stuff that goes on, and none of the people going are prepared for it. I mean, it's one thing if you've lived in Minnesota your whole life, at least you have a sense of what something like this could be like. Some guy coming in from Miami Beach for the Super Bowl, can you imagine? There'd be dead millionaires all over the streets.
Ocasio-Cortez's dream. And Elizabeth Warren celebrates. Let's go to Rob, also in Wisconsin. Where in Wisconsin? What's your temperature? Hello, Rob. Kate, let's go to Angie in Virginia. This can't be the right temperature. Virginia is negative how much, Angie?
Virginia, Minnesota.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Virginia, Minnesota, how cold?
It's negative 34 without the wind chill. With the wind chill, I think it's negative 54.
When's the last time you went outside?
A few minutes ago to start my car.
And it started?
It did. It was plugged in.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. Why are you going out anywhere? Are you nuts?
Yes. We have a doctor appointment.
What, is somebody dying?
No, but...
There will be one soon if you get stopped on the side of the road.
Yeah. I mean, you know, unless it's a root canal that I have to have because it's worse or I'm having a heart attack, I think, honey, no one's leaving to go to the doctor No, unless it's a psychiatrist for asking us to all get into the car and go to the doctor. Angie, right. thanks for your call. Kevin in Michigan.
Hey, Glenn. Good morning, Stu.
Hey. How are you?
Good. I'm actually in Pontiac, Illinois, which is about 100 miles south of Chicago.
Okay.
And we are at negative 24 with the actual temperature and negative 51 with the wind chill. And it's supposed to be down to negative 60 with the wind chill tonight.
Oh, crap. Oh, my gosh. That is insane.
They're looking through the windows, which aren't actually windows anymore. They're sheets of ice.
Are you, I can't imagine what that feels like. I mean, are you tempted at all just to go outside and go like, wow, that's, I mean, does it feel negative 51? And what does that feel like?
It just feels absolutely cold. It hurts to breathe. The only thing I would go outside for is maybe to load up my truck and move to Texas right now.
Yeah, Texas is closed. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's totally
closed. No visitors.
Yeah, nobody, not taking anybody else. No, sorry. All right, man.
Not even two.
thank you, Kevin. Let me go to last call, Glenn in Minnesota. Then I have a question, a weather question, serious one.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yes, Glenn, we have a serious indicator of cold up here at Thief River Falls, Minnesota. Air temp 38 below, wind chill expected tonight, minus 72.
Oh, my gosh.
And they have closed the Arctic Cat snowmobile plant.
Wow. Are you having snow with this?
No. Although I did hear some college kids over in Grand Forks, North Dakota, were throwing hot water out the window, and it was turning to snow before it hit the ground.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, the North
Glenn,
Dakota
thank
was
you so much.
Cold. I was checking around a little bit earlier today, and it looked like North Dakota had the coldest temperatures.
That's why you moved to South Dakota.
Yeah, beautiful South Dakota, where it's like only like minus 30.
Yeah,
it's only minus 30.
I mean, it's crazy.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Last night, we only touched on this just a little bit, on this coming collusion between the old media, the new media on the left, and tech with government. But it's coming, and I'm afraid our voices are going to be snuffed out if we don't all come together. And last night, we came together, you know, all of the talent that we could fly in and, you know, didn't have other shows and commitments. We flew them in last night. There was, 20 of us here last night? Eric Bowling hosted it. I was there the whole time. And it was interesting to watch, especially when Bill O'Reilly came on.
Yeah. We have a clip of that, actually.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, this is from last night's special media meltdown on Blaze TV. Listen.
It's important that people who watch this program and go to BillO'Reilly.com and listen to Beck on the radio and go to the Blaze, that they know it's no longer about media bias. All right? Mm-hmm. It's about money, because the big corporations, Disney, Comcast controls NBC, CBS, want to make money. All right? And they know they can target a liberal crew that hates Trump for a consistent audience, and that's what they're doing.
So, Bill, can I
They're not seeking the truth.
Can I
so that's number one. And number two, the New York Times and the Washington Post, the only two newspapers of note left in America, have banded together and said, we want progressive socialism. We want, and we're going to validate it. So the combination is way beyond any bias that Bernie Goldberg wrote about way back when, or that we experienced, all three of us, in our television careers. Yes. It's way beyond that now, and people need to know it.
He was very clarifying last night about the media and how we've got to stop talking about media bias, because we sound like idiots talking about media bias. This is now all about money, and they just don't care. And they will steamroll anyone, because they know if they fall into bed with the right people, they'll be able to control the system, milk the system, and eventually be the system.
And the bias is still there.
Yeah.
It's now just an ingredient instead of its motivating factor,
yes.
Which is different.
Yes.
Also had Ali and Lauren on last night, this is one of the things I think I really like about the Blaze TV overall, is that you kind of have You have young and old. You have, you know, kind of libertarian to conservative. You have that whole spectrum and all a bunch of different viewpoints. Both Ali and Lauren are millennials who are talking about conservative things, which is, I know, shocking to hear in the media. You don't hear much of it on any of the main networks, including Fox. Mm-hmm. But they were talking about the media landscape and what it looks like today.
What is the process for a young person, conservative or liberal, doesn't matter, to make an impact in media?
Or old person.
Well, I kept my day job until I came in. I worked at The Blaze. But in my off time, I just started to write blog posts at theconservativemillennialblog.com, and I would do videos on my phone that I would maybe edit on my computer if I could figure that out, and then I would post them. I did that for a long time, not getting any views or any followers whatsoever. But after a while, people just started paying attention. It really is amazing the kind of audience that you can build. I already don't know if that might be shifting a little bit. I feel like we kind of came in a little bit of a sweet spot. Mm-hmm. But it is totally possible to use the equipment that you have as long as you are listenable, you are saying something that people want and need to hear.
How do you monetize that, Lauren?
Well, I mean, to monetize it and to make it out a career, you do need to not only have a message, you also, I think, having some good business sense helps. But I think for a lot of people, it's not necessarily having to make this into a career. It's about wanting to be heard. Because I've been on so many smaller channels or part-time podcasters or whatever, which is, you know, how we both started off, who they don't necessarily want to make a lot of money doing this or make a name for themselves. They just want to get their message out there.
That is, it was an interesting conversation because we talked about what the truth is about the media, the corporations, the new media tech companies. Then we talked about how millennials are so important and how different they are and how they reach a completely different audience. And then on top of it, we talked a little bit about the audience and what we need to do to help the audience. And it starts by listening to you and how you can train yourself. And it's going to lead to another special that I'm producing probably, maybe, I don't even want to say when, but it's coming and it's going to be really in depth on the media and our responsibility as citizens. Got a lot of feedback on it. Elliot wrote, Glenn, great show tonight, really refreshing. Somebody else, the best TV I've ever watched or watch. Can we have a fair election without voter fraud? No. Let's see. Joni, excellent show today. Served as a remedy for the anxiety this insane culture is causing. Having Bill O'Reilly's input was massively reassuring. Please keep up the great programming because good media has all but disappeared. Thanks, Blaze TV Live. Media Meltdown was awesome. I know that live news is much more expensive, but I truly enjoyed this, and I hope another live special will come soon.
Are we doing State of the Union coverage now?
Yes, next week.
We are, on the 5th. Okay.
And it's going to be another team thing where Eric is going to be hosting this one. He's our lead political guy in Washington, D.C. He's going to be leading it, but we're doing it down here as well. I'll be leading the discussion down here, and I think everybody's going to be involved in that. And you can subscribe or just join for free. I think there's a month free thing going on right now. Just try it for a month for free. You can go to blaze.com. I'm sorry. You have to go to blazetv.com/Beck. Use the promo code Beck. You'll save 10% on that. This is the best value in conservative TV. Why isn't everyone subscribed? Is there another one from John said, is there any place where you can get this much American right talent, conservative talent? No, there's not.
Well, never has been. I don't think.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't think that's ever happened before.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, that's the great thing about it. A lot of people subscribe to both services, you know, CRTV back in the day and The Blaze. Now you get all of that for the same price as one of them.
Yeah. And, we'll be adding more talent as we go. It'll be talent from all across the spectrum, and we're excited about the things we're working on. Please join us. Our State of the Union special is going to happen next Tuesday night, and it will be live again, Blaze TV Live. So join us for that, and that happens next week. Again, blazetv.com/Beck, promo code Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.